Gatefold Financial Group.
Hour two of your Thursday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. Stick around for Pete Hegseth in the next hour, about 8:35. He'll be joining us. We'll get into yesterday's bar hearings and more with him.
May have to talk a little Representative Ilhan Omar, too. The latest comments from her.
It had been about a week since she'd said something dumb. She was due.
I've already begun outlining the final story in my trilogy, right? And taking a lot of cues from Ilhan Omar for my villain. It's really been helpful.
Send her a copy. Thank you.
I'm actually not kidding. There's some really good stuff that I could pull and add to my bad guy. It's kind of exciting. We will get back into Sam's top five. However, we have been working through number two, Senate approves transportation funding bill that excludes a gas tax increase. Also, big news yesterday, and that was Governor Tim Walz saying that he wants to scrap Minnesota's flawed car registration system known as Minlars, yep. Likely going to cost $73 million to fix.
Over $100 million already spent being vaporized because we're just giving up, and now we're going to spend another close to probably over $100 million for a new system. That's just awesome.
I don't know if this is true or not. I heard yesterday somebody tweeted it out, or I made it up, but I heard that the current version of the current software program, we're going to package all that up from all the deputy registrars, and we're going to send it to the same places that we send all of the losing Super Bowl gear for the
good.
Team.
Good, good, good.
Yeah.
All right.
So the places that get the Super Bowl loser gear, hats and T-shirts and stuff, will also get the Troubled Minlars program.
Very pleased to be joined now by Senator Scott Newman. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking some time and joining us yesterday. Well, you know, I'll let you pick. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with Governor Walz scrapping Minlars, or do you want to start with the Senate transportation bill that went through that excludes the gas tax increase? Choose your own adventure.
How about Minlars first?
All right.
The press conference that was held yesterday, just to help your listeners understand, what has happened is in the governor's deficiency bill that we passed earlier this year, we funded Minlars through the end of June, and that will take us through the next step. And what happened, or what we included in that bill, was a request that I had that we have some expert IT people from the outside, from the private world, come in and take a real hard look at what Minlars was doing, and it's something that I'd wanted to do for almost like a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And Governor Walz, to his credit, he agreed. And we put that provision in the bill, and from March until now, we've had three individuals who are really well known in the field take a look at this Minlars, and they came out with a recommendation that we unfolded yesterday in this press conference.
And that recommendation was to, correct me if I'm wrong, but to essentially, you know, scrap the work that had been done and start fresh, right?
Not quite.
Okay.
What we're going to do is hire some folks from the private sector that will come in and put this program together. But while it's unfortunate we have spent, you know, a decade, and you're right, it's over $100 million to date, it's really unfortunate that has happened. But much of the data that they have pulled together is going to be used in the new system. So it's not a complete waste of money, but in the end, what we're after is a Minlars program that is, in fact, going to work in the long run. Yeah, we're going to spend a bunch of money, but in the long run, I honestly believe it will be cheaper for us because it will be more efficient, and it will be, and this is important, it will be more adaptable because as technology changes, this program that we are going to now put together from the private sector will adapt and provide much better services to the people in the state of Minnesota. So it's a long-range plan. That was the goal all along. And I know that people are going to be unhappy about this, but they would have been unhappy with the existing Minlar's plan anyhow, and it would have cost probably $60 million to complete Minlar's as it was. And in the end, it wouldn't have been a very good program. Yeah. It wouldn't have been a good deal at all, as far as I'm concerned. So I'm very happy with what this report said. You should get your hands on it and take a look at it. It's very detailed, I'm just glad that we have now got some direction, so that I honestly think this Minlar's nightmare, I think the end is in sight. I really do.
Channel 5 has a story today. We have some 75 privately owned motor vehicle registration sites, and they've been struggling. There's a profile of one owner here that said in just January and February, they had to personally spend $30,000 just to keep their doors open. And these registrar sites have been, you know, dealing with the brunt of it and the difficulties and spending a lot of their own money to just keep doing what it is they're doing. Conversations are taking place of potentially offering up some assistance and maybe even reimbursement for the amount of money these private registrars have been having to spend because of this failed system.
The Senate has passed a bill 3 or 4 weeks ago. The Senate passed a bill that reimbursed the deputy registrars, and we appropriated $13 million to do that, to make up for some of their losses. And $13 million is a lot of money. But these registrars, many of whom are in private business, have really taken a hit. And it's the state of Minnesota's fault, not theirs. And so we have passed this bill. We have put on the table this reimbursement plan. The problem is that bill is now hung up in the House. And I have no explanation as to why it isn't moving. Our thought in the Senate was we'd get this bill passed and on the governor's desk early, so that we could help these deputy registrars out. And it's hung up in the House, and it's unfortunately, I think it's pure politics.
Yeah, and that's not the only thing. I mean, there's been a number of instances, I'm thinking about tax conformity, where the expectation was, you know, there was already agreement on those issues. Let's get it through. Let's get it done. Put a bill together, get it through the House, get it through the Senate, get it to Governor Walz. And it seems like even some of the very simple things that everybody agreed before the session should get done and should get done early haven't been getting done. It's got to be kind of frustrating.
It's very frustrating, and we've got, I think 3 weeks left. So what is going to happen, an awful lot of this legislation is now going to move into conference committees. And part of the real problem is that the program that Governor Walz has put together really spends a lot of money. And the Senate is saying, no, we're not going to spend all of that money, and we're not going to raise taxes. And so we're really at loggerheads. Good, bad, or indifferent, that's where we're at.
We were working through Sam's Top 5 this morning. The Senate approves a transportation funding bill that excludes the gas tax increase. The Senate bill would increase the annual fee on all electric vehicles from $75 to $200. And we had some, you know, the Senate vote was 40-27 with 5 DFL defections. Was that surprising at all, or was that expected?
Let me just say that I was pleased.
As are we.
I think that what you saw, we picked up some DFL votes from the rural areas, and it has to do with the gas tax, where the governor is looking for 20 cents a gallon plus indexed to inflation, and so we picked up some rural votes. We also picked up a vote from Senator Dibble, who is not in favor of the bill, but the effect of that is it gets him on the conference committee, and that's the reason for his vote.
What about the HF 1555 that came out of the House and it got unanimously rejected by the Senate? With that coupling, you know, with the Senate transportation bill that went through, is the gas tax dead, or does it still have, you know, is it still breathing a little bit?
Are you referring now to the amendment that was defeated unanimously?
The Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill that came out of the House. That's what I have here, the 1555.
I have to admit that I haven't looked at the House bill yet.
Okay.
Obviously, I'm going to have to, but I'm sorry, but I haven't looked at the House bill yet. I just haven't had time.
Gotcha. Okay. Senator Scott Newman, we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much for calling in.
You too. You bet. You have a nice day. Bye now.
Take care.
651-989-5855. That is the phone number. You can also use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. People do. I believe we still have three more to go in Sam's top five this morning.
Number three.
Hillary Clinton says that she's living rent-free inside of Donald Trump's brain.
What?
Whatever that means.
Good.
It's fine.
Good.
Right. And Donald Trump could never say the same thing about Hillary. Donald Trump could never say the same thing about any of the Democrats right now. Come on. Give me a break.
Hillary Clinton brushed off reports that President Trump wanted to open an investigation into her while special counsel Robert Mueller was investigating him. In an MSNBC interview on Wednesday, that would be yesterday, the 2016 Democratic presidential candidate, also failure, said that the president and others are using talk of investigating her as a means of diverting the attention from Mueller's report. She was responding to a question about how Mueller's team wrote that Trump met with then Attorney General Jeff Sessions in October 2017 and asked him to look into investigating Clinton.
I mean, I'm living rent-free inside of Donald Trump's brain, and it's not a very nice place to be, I can tell you that. So I don't know what they're talking about. Yeah. I've been investigated repeatedly by the other side, and much to their dismay, but to my, you know, satisfaction, it's been for naught.
The best part of waking up is knowing Hillary lost to Trump.
Yeah. Still feels so good.
Yeah.
It just takes me right back.
It's cute that Hillary thinks that anybody cares.
My gosh, man.
Oh, give me a break. It's like, just go away.
And it's got to be... Right, it has to be even worse looking at the slate of lunatics that are running on their side.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We'll get into the Kristen Gillibrand yesterday, her democracy dollars. My gosh, man.
I know.
They're trying to out-stupid one another.
They're desperately flailing about trying to throw any idea out there that's going to get them some attention and some momentum.
Democracy dollars.
You know, you've got universal basic income. You've got, I mean, they're trying to out-free each other.
Right.
Like, okay, what can I give you? I'll give you college tuition. Okay, well, I'll give you $1,000 a month.
It works so well for Oprah. You get democracy dollars, and you get free college tuition, and you don't have to think for yourself.
Number four.
The Minnesota DNR is going to challenge the appeals court ruling on renaming Lake Calhoun Bidet-Makaska. Some reason, this is still a
you
story.
You said it yesterday, Drew. Just drain the stupid thing.
Can you stop?
Just get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Turn it into a parking lot.
It's not worth all this effort.
This is so
stupid. It is not
stupid.
Worth all this time. It is not worth all this attention.
Anything that you turn Lake Calhoun or Bidet-Makaska, whatever, into, just, I don't even care. I just don't want it to be a lake anymore.
Fill it. Just fill it.
Just do it.
Fill it and put a Chipotle there.
Lake Kalmaska.
Just turn it into a cow pasture. Who cares? Anything.
You know what? A lot of people don't like the location of the new MLS, the Alliance Field, right? You know?
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
It's a really, really bad spot.
Actually, Drew, actually, it's Allianz.
I'm sorry. let's fill Lake Calhoun Bidet-Makaska. I'm gonna mush it all together until we figure this out, and let's just move the soccer field there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, let's just move it.
You just pick it up. with a blimp and drop it down on my
like Magneto moved that stadium in Days of Future Past over the White House. Can you just get his
We know it can be
we
done.
Can, we, clearly.
Clearly. The science is there.
So we've seen it happen.
I'm not even sure where I was going with that. It just seems like a really good analogy.
I'm just so sick of this story, and it goes on and on and on.
And the funny thing about it is, like, you get to the core of it when it comes to the, you know, the former vice president, you know, John C. Calhoun. So at the core of this would be, you know, his connection with slavery, right, and American Indians, you know, back in the 1820s. Okay, so all this has done has just raised that awareness to everybody.
Oh, yeah. Who in the world before all of this actually knew who
the background?
Or yeah, the background.
Yeah,
at all.
I just you've just exposed everybody to. And again, there isn't anything necessarily wrong with exposing people that history is history. It's there, but
it's a guy from the 1820s.
If you're talking about perpetuating hate and all this, all they've done is just shown more people.
This is a guy from 200 years ago that we're all talking about.
This
is just dumb.
And who isn't defined by the entirety of one aspect of his life.
Right. Right.
I mean, we wouldn't have a Fort Snelling. We would not have a Fort Snelling if it were not for John C. Calhoun.
Right.
Right. And is the fact that we have a Fort Snelling a net positive? I think most people would argue yes. I think most people would agree that thumbs up Fort Snelling. You know, I'll give it 5 stars on Yelp. Thanks, John C. Calhoun.
Yeah. DNR Commissioner Sarah Strauman said the Walz administration is going to petition the Minnesota Supreme Court this month to reverse a state court of appeals ruling that her agency did not have legal authority to change the South Minneapolis Lake's name last year. The court held that only the legislature and not the DNR can change a lake name that's been in use for more than 40 years. This lake, as we said, was named for Vice You have no authority. The lake was previously named for Vice President John C. Calhoun, a Southerner who backed slavery and promoted American Indian removal in the 1820s, 200 years ago.
Yeah.
Lake Cal, who cares?
People can change. People can change. Context is key, and people should not be, you know, totally judged based off of, you know, singular events that have happened in the past, and you know that includes pinatas.
And I doubt anybody when the
and puppies
when the decision was made
was no
to name this lake Lake Calhoun. I doubt the people involved in that decision were like, yeah, man, this is all because of his views on slavery.
Right. Totally, right? Yeah,
totally. Name it after that as a testament to the one. Wonders of slavery.
You're like, hey, can we get a list of everyone?
No, of course not.
Whoever owned slaves, let's pick a name that sounds cool. Like, everybody, nobody did that.
Everybody that goes into the lake is just wading into the waters of slavery.
Wash yourself with the waves of slavery.
Careful, you might catch the slavery. Awful. These jokes are awful.
I think we have
they're pretty terrible.
I think we have more of Sam's Top 5 that we need to get
we
to.
Do. We
coming
do.
Up.
Let's talk AM 1130 and FM 103.5.
One step beyond.
We were discussing on the post-show podcast, which you can listen to, Justice and Drew, along with Sam, on the iHeartRadio app, if you haven't downloaded it already. But we were discussing ska music yesterday.
We were.
Sam, ska music.
This would qualify.
This oh, okay. Yeah,
this
okay.
Band, the okay. band is called Madness.
Yes.
They were very, very early. Like, before ska ever got popular, Madness was around.
Yeah, you had the Specials, and then you had, like, and then Madness sort of brought it to the mainstream.
I would even say, like Mighty Mighty Boss Tones did more to bring it to the mainstream than Madness.
Ooh,
it's a hot take.
I would argue that most bands influenced by ska music would cite Madness and the Specials long before Mighty Mighty Boss Tones.
I'm not talking about bands influenced by ska music. I'm talking about public consumption of ska music.
I was still arguing those. I don't want to fight.
Well, question
we're
for
talking,
you.
We're talking about a genre of music that is not popular anymore. So that's
plus
okay.
You were in California, so you were into the ska thing, or you were around the ska thing before the rest of the country.
Met Gwen Stefani personally.
It a lot of it originated from that area.
Name drop, pinkies up.
Is there any music today that comes out that would qualify as ska music or close to it?
Not really.
No, there was a there was a stint in the late 90s, largely brought about by No Doubt and their Tragic Kingdom album, where you had a handful of bands, and the Mighty Mighty Boston's had a bit of a they became popular around that time as well. There was a handful of bands, and it was kind of the you know, a lot like swing music and a lot like grunge. It kind of surged, and it was like, oh, it was all the rage, and then it just kind of petered off.
Yeah,
you know, it's still popular among a lot of people, and it's a popular genre, but it's not mainstream and alternative music like it used to be.
Got an email from a listener talking about the controversy around Lake Calhoun, Badamakakaska.
I like
Badamakakaska.
I like that quite a bit. Yeah.
Martin writes in. So, like, for stadiums, people pay for naming rights. You know, the public. You know, the government decides that they're gonna invest and help build a stadium, and you know, U.S. Bank, Allianz, TCF Bank. You know, why can't we do that with lakes?
I know.
Can we do like You know what?
Why can't we sell naming rights to lakes
and buildings?
Yeah. Yeah, the that's a good idea.
University of Minnesota. I've been such a proponent of that for so long.
Well, and to be fair, I feel like the University of Minnesota, a lot of their buildings do end up being named after like large donors, or at least with a lot of universities. So that's kind of already happening in that case. But yeah, I am here for a Lake Noodles and Company. that works for me.
Nice. Yeah, you've gotten very. It was very good, young Padawan. That was stellar.
Thank you.
Especially when it comes to school funding. Except for, and I'll give a quick example. I know we got to wrap up at 5, but I've been a big proponent of bringing in corporate sponsorships to help pay for things. And
yeah, why not?
When you start the school year out, and now we've turned it into this. You know, these parents bringing in bags filled with supplies for the teachers and all this. I sit back and I watch and I go, man, just get a sponsor on board to advertise this stuff. And I saw one school district that actually did that, but they didn't do it right because they ended up allowing advertisements on the school buses. You know, and when I think of that, I think like when you see the Mystic Lake buses, right? You do it right. You wrap the whole bus in staples or whatever. They did these tiny little, they relegated it down these tiny little banners on the side of the yellow school buses. I'm like, that's stupid and not effective at all.
Yeah.
It should look like a NASCAR race car. That's the route you need to go.
Why is it acceptable for just, you know, as an example, TCF Bank to throw a ton of money at the University of Minnesota for stadium naming rights, right? But why can't you do that at a high school?
Right.
You know, why can't you do that at a middle school? Why can't you name an auditorium, a gym, whatever, you know, a field after whatever, and they, you know, corporation throws a bunch of money. That money goes to supplies and, you know, making sure that the teachers aren't having to spend their own money on things like that. I got no problem with that whatsoever.
And I do not like the whole, we don't want to make everything corporate. Man, once you slap a business name on something, the public accepts that so quickly, and it's not an issue. Mm-hmm. You know, once you know Staples Center, Gillette Stadium, nobody thinks twice about it. It doesn't ruin the experience by any stretch of the imagination.
Not even a bit. All right, this was probably the longest.
I don't know. We've said that before.
Yeah, you know, I think one time we went to like 8. It's fine.
Number 5.
Whatever.
It's fine. It's fine.
Robert Downey Jr.
She's ready for a nap in there.
My involvement usually doesn't extend this far into the show.
No, I think that this is a gift to the listener. I don't know what you guys are talking about. I am happy to serve. Robert Downey Jr. Made more money than any of us will ever make in our entire lives off of one movie from Fox News.
Dude, the amount of money that he's made off the entire MCU, you know, the whole starting all the way back to Iron Man, is staggering, and he deserves every penny.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Jesus, I will not begrudge him.
No problem at all.
Single penny.
No, man.
From Fox News, Robert Downey Jr. made his first Marvel movie in 2008, and since then he has been raking in the cash. And with the tremendous success of the most recent Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, Avengers Endgame, Iron Man himself is on pace to make the biggest salary of his long career. According to The Hollywood Reporter, the 54-year-old actor made around $75 million for Infinity War because of a very unique financial arrangement that he made with Marvel Studios head, Kevin Feige. Is it Feige?
Feige.
Feige. Downey Jr. gets back-end pay, which means that he gets a percentage of the film's box office success after it's released. Infinity War made more than $2 billion worldwide, and Endgame...
So this is only the second weekend.
That was Infinity War.
I'm sorry.
Then Endgame has earned more than $1.2 billion in its first weekend alone, so it's safe to assume that his final check is going to be massive.
For a long time... Jack Nicholson had the record of being the highest paid actor for any role for his role as Joker in the very first Batman movie because of a similar deal. He got back end pay, he got residuals, he got revenues, and that movie did so well for so long and did so well in rentals and things like that going forward that he was getting a piece of it, you know, for a long time. And so he held the record in for highest paid actor for a single role. I'm assuming, I don't know if it's true or not, but I'm assuming that this deal blows that one away.
It must. This Robert Downey Jr. also negotiated a staggering $5 million a day for 3 days of work on the 2017 blockbuster Spider-Man Homecoming.
Cool. Good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Other MCU stars who stand to make huge paydays are Scarlett Johansson in her upcoming Black Widow movie. She's reportedly making around $20 million for the film. Meanwhile, Chris Hemsworth and Chris Evans reportedly renegotiated their salaries for Infinity War and Endgame, and both are making between $15 to $20 million per movie.
And now we have one more additional to the top five that we'll wrap up with coming up in just a moment. Plus, we'll get into the hors d'oeuvres for your commute being provided by MnDOT. Samuel L. Jackson also holds a distinct honor of being he's the actor who's been in the most successful movies. Like, he combined of all the movies that he's been in of major franchises. Like, I think collectively he's made the most money from all the movies that he's been in. You know, when you think of Star Wars and all the other ones.
Star Wars, Jurassic Park.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's in that.
Robert Downey Jr. is fascinating for those that don't remember, Sam, you may not even know. I mean, his career was toast. I mean, there was, back in the 90s when... I remember it, but the reports of him and his drug abuse and being found in hotel rooms. I mean, his turnaround in his career, it's fascinating to see just how, talk about not being judged by a single event in your life, how this guy turned it around. And I don't think many people remember going back to Less Than Zero and Weird Science, for crying out loud. He was in those films back in the 80s.
He was an 80s teen star, essentially. Part of that, the Brat Pack, I think they called
burned
themselves.
Burned out bad.
And he flamed out big time and had a lot of problems, substance abuse problems and things like that. And his career was essentially done.
Yeah.
And then...
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, he's always been really, really talented.
Yes.
Like, even going back to those films...
Oh, yeah.
He's always been a very, very good actor.
His lighter role in Weird Science is hysterical. Like, you wouldn't even recognize him if you watched it. You'd be like, that's Robert Downey Jr., but it's so funny.
In related Avengers news, I believe that probably after the break, we will discuss some Avengers Endgame Midnight movie showings in Orange County, Florida that may have been measles exposure sites.
Oh my gosh, the measles outbreak in the country is so stupid.
It's really dumb.
So stupid.
It's so preventable.
Hi, this is
Talk.com.
In an hour from now, from Fox News, we're going to be speaking to a gentleman who goes by the name of Pete Hegseth, because that is his name. Looking forward to our discussion with him. We'll talk a bit about the Barr testimony from yesterday and how William Barr decided, I'm not coming back today because you guys all suck.
Kind of what he said.
That is pretty much...
I do not blame him one bit.
No, man.
Even the Senate hearing yesterday was a... It was a joke. Can you imagine, one led by House Democrats?
No. Yes, I can. And so can he, which is why he's not coming today.
Right. We mentioned before the break this story out of Orange County, Florida, that some Avengers Endgame Midnight showings may have been measles exposure sites.
Oh, my gosh.
From a news outlet that is apparently called Boing Boing. But it's legit. I looked it up.
It sounds legit.
The LA Times.
One on my list of third-tier websites.
I've heard of Boing Boing.
Boing Boing's a pretty solid place. Yeah.
But when you cite it as your source, it kind of sounds silly.
Straight out of Boing Boing.
A producer named Sam.
The LA Times reports that Orange County officials say a woman with measles may have exposed others in the region to the contagious disease, including people who were at a midnight showing of Avengers Endgame in Fullerton late Thursday and early Friday. This is a highly contagious disease that is fully preventable by a decades-old vaccine. Almost all cases of measles in the U.S. begin with people who traveled to countries where measles is prevalent. The latest measles outbreak in L.A. County this year began when an area resident visited Vietnam earlier in 2019 and contracted measles. The contaminated individual then spread measles to three other people in LA County. People can spread measles 4 days before they develop a rash.
And not that it matters. That air, I've actually been to that movie theater. That's not just a bragging camp.
Does that mean you have
moment.
Measles now?
No.
That's like opposite of bragging camp. Because that's now measles theater.
No, it's
place.
A highly concentrated. I mean, it's a very densely populated community in that area. I mean, you get it. It starts spreading there, and you know it's everywhere. It's a lot of people that live in that area. It's right around Disneyland and in Orange County and all that.
You should quarantine the entire state.
Well, there's an article from PJ Media.
Yes,
that gets into this, and it's funny because the person's being sarcastic, but there's kind of a level of seriousness to it. So in PJ Media, they write this. A couple of weeks ago, I wrote a post about an El Al flight attendant who became comatose after contracting measles. After sharing it on Twitter, an anti-vaxxer woman responded by saying that I had no right to tell her what to do with her body and that I should enjoy getting cancer from vaccinations.
Oh, cool.
Lovely.
Neat. Yeah,
that's how you win people over.
Twitter's the best.
Yeah, that's... I bet that woman's an influencer.
That is a real job.
I have had. Oh my gosh!
Don't.
Drew, don't. Don't. Let's not go down that road.
I will resist.
The top
if you
five
make
took
money
long
from
enough
it,
this morning.
It's a job.
The article writer from PJ Media in regard to anti-vaxxers went on to say, I've had similar encounters with the anti-vaccination crowd in the past. They're filled with ignorance, self-righteousness, and incessantly share their fact-free opinions with anyone who happens to be passing by. So the point that they go to make here is that, look, I somewhat agree with a random Twitter woman who wants me to get cancer. I don't have a right to tell her what to do with her body, unless it affects my body, of course. The case of the El Al flight attendant highlighted the need for people to receive two vaccinations. The real problem with the outbreak in the U.S., however, is that too many people are now not vaccinated at all.
Yeah, the misinformation from the anti-vaccination movement has become so prevalent that it has become a genuine and real problem. And I don't know how to deal with it because I'm with the author of this piece. I am not into mandating things. I'm not into mandating vaccinations. I'm not into mandating people should do with their bodies. But the consequences of more and more people opting not to vaccinate their children or receive vaccinations themselves do spread to other people who, in my opinion, take the responsible route and actually get vaccinated for these diseases.
As of April 26th, more than 70% of 704 people confirmed measles since January 1st were unvaccinated. 70% of the 704 people were unvaccinated. As we have already exceeded our worst year since the disease was eradicated, and it is only April, it isn't far-fetched to think that we may be approaching very dangerous numbers. And this is the part of it that really stuck out to me. In an earlier post, one expert said that once we hit a few thousand cases, so it's April, we're at 704. Once we hit a few thousand cases here in the U.S., then children will die. As we've already exceeded the worst year since it was eradicated. So once we hit a few thousand cases, now you're going to have, you know, I mean, apart from people getting measles,
right,
kids are going to die. In the spirit of live and let live, I propose that we let anti-vaxxers and their disease-spreading spawn, this is according to the article writer, do as they please as long as they don't do it around sane people who are trying to avoid diseases that were once eradicated. He suggests that they can go to, like, anti-vaxxer villages.
You know what? Okay.
He uses a more colorful language. He says it's time to bring back leper colonies. We can call them anti-vaxxer villages, if that makes people feel better.
Yep.
But they're really leper colonies.
And populate them with those who fervently believe that the vaccines that get rid of diseases are actually causing other diseases. They can happily spend their days with like-minded people having barbecues, chanting in drum circles, and watching those closest to them become deathly ill because junk science won.
Hey, he's being sarcastic.
Yep.
You know, he's engaging in some satire here, obviously. But yeah, it's I struggle with this. I have a real issue with what to do with this rise of the sentiment of anti-vaccinations and refusing to give vaccinations, because it's one thing if it's just one or two people here or there. It's another thing when you start having an outbreak. And something needs to be done to stem that outbreak.
It needs to not be, the conversation needs to not be relegated to opinion pieces like this in PJ Media. The fact that we've eradicated it once already, I would hope, proves in theory that with proper information and proper information campaigns and proper coverage of this and the truth, we can eradicate it once again. We've done it once before.
Yeah.
This is the bad side of Twitter. This is the unintended bad consequence of people being able to anonymously go and spread misinformation on social networking platforms, and the willingness that people have to just jump on board a group of individuals suddenly now because you have people agreeing.
Right. These people are the equivalent of the guys that would stand on a soapbox on a street corner and you know, yell out nonsense and get largely ignored. The problem is now, you know, Twitter is their soapbox. Twitter is their street corner. So it's, you know, whereas before it would be confined to one little area, and the likelihood of them interacting with somebody that they could convince or sway was minimal. Now they're putting it out there and the entire world can find it. So if you're even curious, right, and I don't blame anybody for being curious about anything, right? You see an article or you overhear a conversation between people and they're questioning the efficacy and safety of vaccines. And you don't know any better. You've never done any research. So you're curious. I'm going to go home and I'm going to hop online and I'm going to see what I can find out. Well, the problem is, chances are most of what you're going to find is nonsense.
Right.
Most of what you're going to find is bogus, and it's BS, and it's put out there by like-minded people to try to convince and sway you.
Right.
So now you find yourself going down a rabbit hole of misinformation that all looks credible and it seems like it might be legit. And I don't know. I mean, this looks like a decently credible and well put together website. Maybe it's real. I don't know. And they're all telling you that all those other websites that are telling you vaccines are safe, well, they're run by evil corporations,
right,
and evil doctors that want to harm you and want to do you harm. So now you find yourself in the situation where you're questioning everything. That's the danger of letting misinformation like this take root.
And we had a lengthy conversation with Jesse Kelly yesterday, which you can hear on the iHeartRadio app in the just after 8:30 from yesterday's show. And there was an article from The Atlantic talking about the studies that have been done about Twitter and how it's not as impactful as many people believe when you begin to break down the demographics of the population, who uses it and what they're actually tweeting. Okay. And I agree with those studies, right? This is hard data and it makes sense. That being said, this type of unintended consequence born of places like Twitter is where you can get into real danger, because even though you have a smaller segment of the population than you actually believe is on Twitter, when this stuff gets perpetuated, when you're looking at 704 cases already of measles where it had already been eradicated, and all you need is to get into the thousands and children start dying, it's very easy to see how quickly that can spread based off of misinformation and people who are buying into the fear that if you go and get vaccinated, you're going to end up getting something else. It's to the detriment of everybody else, you know, everybody else. And I'm with you. I don't think you should be mandating it, but what we need is a better campaign to educate the public at large. Like, yeah. Where is the, You know, where is whatever organization out there going, okay, stop. We have to stop this now, because if we don't, people are going to die. And these will be senseless deaths.
Absolutely. Preventable and senseless. 100% preventable and senseless. So, you know, we've started to hear some chatter and some conversations from people about, well, you know, maybe if you don't get vaccinated, you know, if you're not going to vaccinate your children, they can't go to public school. You know, maybe, you know, what kind of consequences and leverage can we use to try to persuade people and convince people to get their kids vaccinated without going the route of we're going to mandate it and we're going to force it into your body? I don't know where that line is.
No.
I haven't really settled on what degree I'm comfortable with there yet, but I do believe something needs to be done to try to convince more people that this is the safe and safer and right way to go.
I do believe, was it New York that was looking at mandating? I thought it was New York.
Probably.
All right. Okay. Well, and you can, I have a quick story here that we'll get to in just a moment of something else New York is doing. First off, though, let's go and talk with Jackie in Maplewood. Good morning, Jackie. Welcome to Justice and Drew. What are your thoughts this morning?
You know, I have a lot of friends who are anti-vax very adamantly, and I think it's funny when I have conversations with them. I've worked in hospitals and with doctors, and I have conversations, and I share with them, like, the actual information, and they don't want to hear it. Like, I can give them – I have a relative who has a son who has autism, and she is adamant that he has autism because of a vaccine. And when I showed her all the research that shows that autism can be linked to drug use during pregnancy or drug use on the biological father's side, which is what happened. The dad used some drugs while they were trying to get pregnant. She absolutely refused to do that. So in my perspective, it seems like a lot of these anti-vaxxers, you can present them with the facts, but they don't want to hear it because they want to have this confirmation of what they already believe, and
yeah.
You know, they're only going to seek out the people that already agree with them.
Yeah, and social networking doesn't help; it perpetuates that. And thank you for the phone call, Jackie. And it is really it's really unfortunate. And the autism, correct me if I'm wrong, that was completely debunked, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was a bogus study. And okay, I just wanted to make sure. And Jenny McCarthy, don't listen to her. You know.
651-989-5855 or #250 on your mobile device and just say TCNT. Also, keep using that hashtag TCNT on Twitter. You want to comment on this or any of the other stories we're covering this morning?
Hey, did you see, so just real quick, I know we got a break, but New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, apparently, Drew, I don't know if you guys know this or not, he used his executive powers. All right. They're going to phase out processed meats and reduce beef by 50% for all schools, jails, and hospitals and cafeterias where government workers eat. So basically, they banned hot dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's fantastic.
Meatless Mondays. our Minneapolis man-child mayor, Jacob Fry, he's a big fan of this, by the way. Don't be surprised.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Don't be surprised if this happens here within the next year or so.
Speaking of food, we are going to dive into how you can get hors d'oeuvres during your commute, courtesy of MnDOT, and we'll also get to your phone calls as well, 651-989-5555.